This is Radio Orbit, exploring the secrets of everything on KOPN Columbia.
Columbia 89.5 FM. This is Mike Hagan. It is Monday, the 29th of August in 2005, and it's good to be back on the air. I was gone for a week, took a little bit of vacation, and doing it up again here as it should be. So let's get a little business out of the way here real fast. Some of the operating funds for KOPN are provided by listener support and a donation from Mojo's. Information about Mojo's is available at www.mojoscolumbia.com or at 573-875-1588. All right, let's get down to business here. Good to be back, as I said, on vacation last week. Went to Colorado. Spent a little time there with some friends and family. And had a great time, actually. I'll talk a little bit about that maybe in a little while. But before we get going here, let me do a quick thanks to Debbie. Debbie Johnson, always doing a great job with Free Range Radio Theater. That's on every Monday from 10 o'clock until 11, setting things up nicely for us here on this program. And also, before Debbie, is the one and only Kelvin Walsh and Jason doing up Jazz plus Blues equals Soul. That's always Monday night as well. And the Boogeyman following me up. So good stuff on Mondays, and I hope you guys are enjoying it. So stick around, and I hope you were here earlier if you weren't listening next week to those shows that I mentioned before. They're all really good, and I enjoy them. And let's see. Okay, what's going on? Yeah, so I was in Colorado, and I spent a little time in Aspen. Luckily, I have a friend, a close friend, who lives in Aspen. Otherwise, I wouldn't have enough money to go there because it's just it's obscene, quite frankly. But anyway, and we went there and had a nice time and got to sort of see the way people up there are living and the way they see the world these days. Spent for like 4 days there and talked to lots of different people, and actually was sort of encouraging, I thought. But at any rate, no big deal. And went down to Denver, have lots of friends. Of course, I lived in Denver for about 15 years before moving to Columbia here, so there were lots of people to see and things to do, and had a nice time. And it was the first time that I got to take my son up to the mountains, and it was cool because he actually is getting old enough where he understands that sort of thing. So anyway, we had a real nice time, and it was good to be out of work for a little while and just able to sort of take a deep breath. So anyway, Colorado was cool. Back again, though, and I'm glad I missed doing the show. I also better say thanks to Kyle and Tony for doing the show last week. Thanks so much, you guys. I appreciate it. They did their own thing, I guess, for the first hour of the show, and then aired an old interview that I did with Dr. Colin Ross, the head of the Ross Institute for Psychological Trauma down there in Dallas, Texas. And it is one of the most intense interviews I ever did, and it was aired very early on during the life of this program back in September of last year. So I think very few people heard it at the time when I originally aired it. But hopefully more people heard it last week, because it's important that people know a little bit about the history of that stuff. And if you missed it and you're interested in what I'm talking about, send me an email or give me a phone call or something like that. I'll give out that information in just a few minutes here, okay? All right, what else we got? I don't know. All right, so thanks again, Kyle, Tony, appreciate it. All right, the hurricane. There's this monster hurricane right now that's just blasting through a four-state area, Mississippi and Louisiana in particular, just like the Armageddon scene down there right now, and has been for the last 12 hours or so. Hopefully starting to let up a little bit, but it has been sort of a worst-case scenario for the people that live down there in the New Orleans area and all along that the Gulf Coast, as a matter of fact. So anyway, but I think it let's see how it turns out. I'm sort of hopeful that there won't be too much. And I stutter on my words here because you think, what's too much? I mean, nothing is too much. In other words, if it destroys one person's home, you know, it's too much for them. But at any rate, there's been a tremendous amount of speculation on really, really, really widespread, big-time damage. And I'm just hoping that somehow they can avoid a real major reconstruction. And I hope that there's not a significant loss of life. So we'll see how that all pans out, but Mother Nature showing us what she's all about. And, of course, there are some people that would say that it's Mother Nature with the assistance of the human hand. I don't know about that. I'm not really willing to speculate about it right now. I actually tried to call Scott Stevens last night, see what his thoughts on all this were, to get sort of the contrarian perspective, but I didn't get a hold of him. But anyway, regardless, it's not that relevant. If the stuff is going on, it's going on. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is these things are happening, and hopefully we can come out of them without complete destruction and all this loss of life. So, you know, it's just the beginning of hurricane season. It's not even September. You know, we're a day or two away, but we've got another good 6 weeks of big-time hurricane season. And if you look off the coast of Africa, you'll see these things just sort of rolling off, and you just wonder what the next 6 weeks are going to be like. But hopefully we can dodge some of these storms. You know, it used to be that a good number of them would just roll right up into the Atlantic and go out to sea and sort of dissipate in the northern latitudes up there without ever making landfall. And it seems like for the last couple of years that none of them do that, that they all just come barreling right across the Atlantic, none of them turn north, and they all just slam right into Florida, or, you know, at least the eastern seaboard down there. So, I don't know. It really makes you wonder what's going on. If nothing else, certainly these ocean currents and weather patterns are changing for sure. That's become obvious as well. So, we'll be talking about this stuff more and more, I guess, in the future as it moves on, as we see more of this. So, the lesson, I think if there's a lesson with any of this stuff, it's be prepared. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Regardless of where you live, there's always something that can happen that can really upset your own personal apple cart. So, the lesson maybe is to be prepared. You know, and that doesn't mean, you know, go hole up in your cellar or go dig a cave in the mountains. It just means get your act together and, you know, be prepared both mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever. But know in your mind, that's half the battle, you know. If you've actually considered it, if you've actually thought about it, you know, something outrageous could actually happen. Well, just having thought about it and considered it, it goes a long way to being able to handle it if it actually happens or anything like that. So know in your mind and in your head and in your heart that really, you know, every day is a gift. Don't let it fool you. And it can change at any moment. So keep your eyes open. Appreciate the day. And always be ready for something wild to happen, because it can happen at any moment, and these days it seems to happen more and more every moment. At any rate, lots going on. Now, for those of you on the web and those of you who have sent me emails, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Hello to everyone listening over the web who are hearing this after the fact. Special thanks to a new friend of mine named Larry out in California, who has given me a bunch of new energy and a much-needed boost, sort of, and I'm really looking forward to working with Larry. If you're out there, hope you're listening. And website improvements, lots of other things coming on the way, and lots of work ahead of us, but lots of great things to come. So tonight, all right, we got a great show coming up tonight, some great music as always. Stick around. Back in a few minutes, we'll probably do space weather, talk about some of the upcoming guests. And then I'm probably going to do a really thorough backgrounder on tonight's topic. And if I haven't mentioned it, tonight's topic is a place called Coral Castle. And my guest is John Depew. And this place, Coral Castle, is in a little town called Homestead, Florida. And it's an amazing story and a real mysterious one. And we're going to do our best to try to get to the bottom of it. And John Depew believes he has come up with some answers to this very enigmatic question, Coral Castle. And I'll tell you more about that in just a little while. But stick around. It's a real interesting story. You can check it out on the web at www.radioorbit.com, RadioOrbit.com. Also email me at orbitradio, orbitradio.com. I take that back, orbitradio@aol.com. So email at orbitradio@aol.com. I'll get it right one of these moments here. All right, and the phone number here in the studio is area code 573-874-5676, 1-800-895-5676. And I don't think we'll be taking any calls tonight with our guest. I asked if he wanted to do that, and he would rather just sort of go through the information on his own. He's, in his own words, a simple guy with a complicated message. We're going to enjoy the information that he brings to us nonetheless, and we'll do our best here to make him comfortable. So, okay, that's about it. We'll come back in just a few minutes. Let's start things off with a little apropos tune here and a heartfelt prayer to all the people down there on the Gulf Coast and going through this hellacious situation in New Orleans and thereabouts all around that area. So things will clear up and there is light in the morning. So stick around and we'll be just back in a few minutes. This is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. All right.
The blue on the street, loose incomplete under sky, so smoky blue green. I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so we dance the sidewalk thing. My memory is muddy, what's this river that I'm in? New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim. Postcards ain't got no souvenirs.
Tragically hip, New Orleans is sinking. And this is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. Let's do space weather real fast here. It's going to be a great alignment, convergence between the planets Venus and Jupiter on September 1st. It's going to be a great little sort of close encounter in the sky. The two planets, Venus and Jupiter, will be only a degree apart. That's not much at all. If you look at toward the sky and you hold your arm out, it's just basically the width of a finger between the two of them in the sky, and you'll be able to see them over the next few nights drawing closer and closer together up until the 1st of September. So keep your eye on that as the sun is setting, and those planets will be rising in the west, Venus and Jupiter. So check that out. It'll be a beautiful sight from pretty much anywhere in North America here. All right, the sun is relatively quiet, although there's not a whole lot of sunspots peppered on the front of the disk as there were last week. But there aren't really any large areas that pose real strong threats over the next few days. Looks like solar activity is going to be relatively low in the days ahead. But there were a couple of large coronal mass ejections that created a big-time solar wind that hit the Earth's magnetic field back about a week ago before, while I was on vacation, back on the 24th, and there was a really severe geomagnetic storm, lots of bright aurora over Canada and many of the United States, states up there in the northern latitudes. The display was wonderfully good, especially in New Zealand, apparently, and down in the southern hemisphere in Australia, where they watch what they call the southern lights, or the Aurora Australis. All of this stuff is available if you're interested in it at cyberspaceorbit.com. You can always go down to Kent's site, and he has most of this stuff listed right now on his front page. And that address, one more time, is www.cyberspaceorbit.com. Kent is a frequent guest on this program and sort of a guru of mine who does a wonderful job of coalescing all of this information and sharing it with lots and lots of people every day. Has a huge number of hits on the website every month, and lots of great information there, thanks to our good buddy Kent Stedman. So, all right, let's see, what else we want to talk about real fast. Next week, I'm pretty excited. Allison and Alex Gray, for those of you interested in the art scene, we'll be talking to two of the most influential artists of our time. And live from their studios in New York, Allison and Alex Gray. That'll be next week live. And I recorded an interview with Ralph Abraham, Dr. Ralph Abraham, of course, the fantastic chaos theorist from Santa Cruz University, University of California, Santa Cruz. And I'll probably air that within a week or two. I'd like to, it sort of jives with the Alex Gray stuff, so we may run the Ralph Abraham interview the week after that. But Paradise is going to be back on the show real soon. Paradise Newland, of course, for people familiar with the show, the partner of Dr. Michael Heisen out there at the Sirius Institute in Pune, Hawaii. Paradise and I are going to do a show on water birth and these amazing babies that are being born in a water environment, sometimes with dolphins, actually. It's incredible. So anyway, let's see, Dr. Jeremy Narby on September the 26th, I guess. Jeremy Narby, the wonderful anthropologist from Stanford University, will be with us on the show here live. Lucy Pringle will be talking about crop formations. Vincent Bridges, Jay Widener's partner on Monument to the End of Time. And as a matter of fact, Jay is going to be on the show again sometime soon. We spoke just a couple of days ago. We're going to do another show on alchemy, not particularly related to the Great Cross at Undai, but sort of a show on alchemy in general, and we also may tie that into some of the references in film where the great work has been communicated through moving pictures. And Jonathan Miller Weisberger coming up, him and his sister, hopefully. They're, of course, very involved down in Costa Rica in rainforest
biodiversity and conservation strategies, all that sort of stuff. John Lash from metahistory.com. All that stuff coming up in the next weeks and months. All right? Okay, one more time, the email address, orbitradio@aol.com. The website, www.radioorbit.com, RadioRBIT.com, just one O in the middle there. Phone number in the studio here, 573-874-5676, 1-800-895-5676. We'll take another break here, and we'll come back and do some background on this wild story of Coral Castle in Homestead, Florida. And then at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by my guest tonight, John DePew, who has presented this information at his website, which is www.coralcastlecode, just the way it sounds, coral, C-O-R-A-L, castle, code.com. And you can go there directly from radioorbit.com, or you can type that in yourself and go right to his website. But there's lots of imagery that is relevant to the discussion that we're going to have. So if at all possible, get online and get your computer fired up and follow along with us at John's website, coralcastlecode.com. All right? Okay, this is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. We'll be back in just a few minutes, and I'll play some music for you here and get my guest on the line and come back, and we'll do a nice little background piece on everything that we're going to be talking about in just about a half an hour. Okay, stick around. Back in a few minutes. Mike Hagan, Radio Orbit, back in a few.
And my love's
Okay, Fury in the Slaughterhouse. Every generation has its own disease. This is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. I'm going to play one more piece of music here. I've got my guest on the line. Then we'll do some good background on the story we're going to talk about tonight, but I need to do a couple things to get ready for it. So stick around. I want to play one thing for you here. This is a sort of a now defunct band from Yakima, Washington, and it features Doug Schoolcraft, amazing guitar player, singing as well, playing guitar, and Paul Benoit playing guitars and on vocals, Dave Weber on drums, and not sure who's playing bass, but anyway, great stuff here from the former Yakima, Washington band, Cross-Eyed. This one goes out to Ice Station Zebra. This is called Closer to the End. This is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about Coral Castle. Stick around.
Every step forward is closer to the end.
All right, there you have it. That is, unfortunately, the defunct Cross-Eyed, but those guys are moving on to bigger and better things, including my buddy, Michael Pacheco, who's out there making music in Washington with some of these other guys. So anyway, good stuff. All right, this is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. I'm not going to do a whole lot of news tonight. If you're interested in current events of the day, strange, unusual, or the mundane, whatever, my best advice is to go over to cyberspaceorbit.com. Check out the news over there. Kent always doing a wonderful job both with words and pictures over there, especially in times like these when things are going down like they are in the Gulf Basin right now. Kent just tireless and sort of covering all the angles on this sort of stuff. So check it out at cyberspaceorbit.com if we're not talking about it here tonight, all right? All right, anyway, not a lot of extra time tonight because I want to do a good background on the Coral Castle story, so here we go. All right, the question is this. Did this Latvian immigrant, did he rediscover the secrets of the building of the pyramids or levitation or anti-gravity or something like this? The story that we're going to be talking about is called Coral Castle, or the place, I guess, that we should be talking about. It's in the town of Homestead, Florida. It's one of the most remarkable structures that has ever been built. In terms of sort of level of accomplishment, it's been compared to Stonehenge. It's been compared to the Great Pyramids of Egypt. It's been compared to Greek temples. It is just an astounding thing. And some say it is even a miraculous thing because it was quarried, it was transported, it was designed and fashioned and constructed by one guy, by one man. And he was a small, 5-foot-tall, 100-pound Latvian immigrant whose name was Edward Leetskalnin. And Edward Leetskalnin was something else. All right, many men have sort of single-handedly built their own homes, but Leetskalnin's building materials and the way he, well, nobody really knows the way he did, but what he did, but the entire undertaking was just remarkable. He used these huge blocks of coral, some weighing as much as 30 tons. I mean, comparable in size to some of the largest stones in Giza, on the Giza Plateau. And somehow he was able to move them and raise them and set them in place without the assistance of any modern machinery, no cranes, nothing like this. He did it all by himself in secrecy. And so basically this is the mystery. It's estimated that some 1,000 tons of coral were used in the construction of just the walls and the towers of this. And it really is a castle. You have to go to my website and take a look at this and then follow some of the links. But it really is a remarkable place. And there is an additional 100 tons estimated so that was used just in furniture and art objects and things like this. Among the things that were built there was an obelisk that Mr. Leetskalnin raised that weighed some 28 tons. The wall surrounding the Coral Castle is 8 feet tall and consists of these huge blocks, which each weigh several tons. There are big crescents that are perched on these big high walls. There's a 9-ton or 10, I forget exactly, a 9 or a 10-ton swinging gate that moves. It's so perfectly balanced that it moves at just the touch of a finger. And, you know, this is not a story. This is real. You can go down and visit this place yourself. And much has been written about this place. And anyway, there are stones that are, like I said before, as big or bigger than some of the largest blocks at the Great Pyramid site in Giza. So working all by himself, this guy, Edward Leetskalnin, built the home that he originally called the Rockgate Park in Florida City. Now, here's the other remarkable thing. Then he moved it. He originally built it in one place and then moved the entire thing to another town. Anyway, he began building the thing in 1920, and he moved the entire thing like some, I don't know, 15, 20 years later or something. He moved it to another town. It's just bizarre. But anyway, how he managed to do all of this stuff has remained a mystery for all these years. And no one really saw him do it. He was a very secretive man. He worked at night only by lantern. And there's really, at the time, we didn't have the sort of surveillance techniques and things in operation that we have today. But anyway, no one knew what this guy was doing. He did it on a pretty large piece of property by himself. And there's really no credible witnesses to how this little, small, sort of frail man was able to move these huge, giant blocks of rock. And even when he moved the entire thing, when he moved the whole structure to this other town, neighbors apparently only saw these big giant coral rocks being transported on a borrowed truck, and no one seems to know how he got them on or off the vehicle. And that's a question, though, too, is that, I mean, I don't know any vehicle that could just pull a 30-ton stone, so that's a question. But again, maybe it has to do with this secret or whatever. Anyway, we'll have to ask John about it. But anyway, lots of weird stories have been told and bizarre theories about Coral Castle. And tonight we're going to talk with John DePew, who has come up with a very unique and interesting solution of his own, and we're going to let him discuss that with us and follow along with him on the website. Let's give that out one more time. The website is www.coralcastlecode.com, and you can get there directly or by going to radioorbit.com and just follow the links on my front page there. All right? Let's see. There are a number of theories, but we're not going to really talk about any of those right now because we've got our own that's coming up. But I do want to read a little bit more. I'm not sure how much I'm going to read about this, but this is a piece that I found on the web, go figure, that was written by Christopher Dunn. And if you don't know who Chris Dunn is, his most remarkable work, I guess, is called The Giza Power Plant. And it is a book that was written a number of years ago, but it describes a novel description and explanation of the pyramids on the Giza Plateau in Egypt. Anyway, Christopher Dunn is an engineer and a machinist and a guy who knows a whole lot about stone and moving stone and working with stone and this sort of thing. So I'm just going to read a bit here from Chris Dunn, and we've got, 8 minutes or so before the top of the hour. Probably play a piece, We'll probably play a piece of music between now and then. So I'll just read a little bit here, and then we'll see how things look at the top of the hour there, okay? All right. Now, again, this is from Christopher Dunn. All right, while the cutting techniques... And by the way, this is from AtlantisRising.com. Just go there and look for Chris Dunn and Coral Castle. You'll find this. While the cutting techniques of the ancient pyramid builders have been a continuing topic for debate, they have not received the same attention and controversy as the proposed methods that were used to lift and transport huge cyclopean blocks of stone. While Egyptologists and Orthodox believers in primitive methods argue that the huge blocks were moved and put into place using only manpower, experts in moving heavy weights using modern cranes throw doubt on the subject. My company recently installed a hydraulic press that weighed 65 tons. In order to lift it and drop it through the roof, they had to bring in a special crane. The crane was brought to the site in pieces and was transported from 60 miles away over a period of 5 days. After 15 semi-trailer loads, the crane was finally assembled and ready for use. As the press was lowered into its specially prepared pit, I asked one of the riggers about the heaviest weight he had ever lifted. He claimed that it was a 110-ton nuclear power plant vessel. When I related to him that 70 to 200-ton weights of the blocks of stone used inside the Great Pyramid and the Valley Temple He expressed amazement and disbelief at the primitive methods that are promoted by Egyptologists. For many, it is enough just to argue this issue from a logical standpoint. For others, the subject becomes more meaningful when a proposed method is demonstrated and proven to be successful. There is only one man in the world who, by demonstration, has supported the claim. I know the secret of how the pyramids of Egypt were built. The man is now deceased. That claim was made by an eccentric Latvian recluse named Edward Leedskalnin. An immigrant to the United States of America, Leedskalnin devised a means to single-handedly lift and maneuver blocks of coral weighing up to 30 tons each in Homestead, Florida, using his closely guarded secret. He was able to quarry and construct an entire complex of monolithic blocks of coral in an arrangement that reflected his own unique character. On average, the weight of the single block used in the coral castle was greater than those used to build the Great Pyramid, and he labored for 28 years to complete the work, which consisted of a total of 1,100 tons of rock, as we said before. What was his secret? How is it possible for a 5-foot-tall, 110-pound man to accomplish such a feat without knowing techniques that are uncommon to our contemporary understanding of physics and mechanics? Leedskalnin was a student of the universe. Within his castle walls built of coral blocks weighing many tons, he had a 22-ton obelisk, a 22-ton moon block, a 23-ton Jupiter block, a Saturn block, a 9-ton gate, a rocking chair that weighed 3 tons, and numerous large puzzles. A huge 30-ton block, which he considered to be his major achievement, he crowned with a gable-shaped rock. These personal accomplishments have astounded and surprised many engineers and technologists who compare them with those achieved by workers handling similar weights in industry today. For the miracles of construction of engineering, Leedskalnin received attention not only from engineers and technologists, but from the U.S. government, who paid him a visit hoping to be enlightened. Leedskalnin received them gracefully, and they left none the wiser. In 1952, failing ill on his last legs, Leedskalnin checked himself into a hospital and slipped away from life, taking his secrets with him. So, an amazing story, and we're going to talk more about it in just a few minutes. Okay? Edward Leedskalnin. The mystery, the story of Coral Castle. And my guest tonight, John Depew, the discoverer and author of the Coral Castle Code, which again you can reach by going to coralcastlecode.com or through my website at www.radioorbit.com. And we're going to come back in just a few minutes and talk with Mr. Depew about how exactly Mr. Leedskalnin did what he did, at least from John Depew's standpoint, what was involved technologically. And who knows what else we'll talk about. But the bottom line is we have a good idea, or John has a good idea on how he thinks this was done, and we're going to talk about it. So stick around. This is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. We'll be back in just a few minutes talking about the Coral Castle, an amazing work of architecture down in Florida. And my guest again, one more time, John Depew. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Bright Eyes on KOPN Radio Orbit. Dressed in women's clothes.
made ashamed, why'd you lock them in a drawer? Well, I don't think that I ever loved you more than when you turned away, when you slammed the door, when you stole the car and drove towards Mexico, and you wrote bad checks just to fill your arms. I was young enough, I still believed in war. Turn back into steam. But me, I'm a single cell on a serpent's tongue. There's a mighty field where the garden was, and I'm glad you got away. But I'm so stuck out here. My clothes are soaking wet from your brother's. You're the yellow bird that I've been waiting for. The end of paralysis. I was a statue. Now I'm drunk as hell on a piano bench. And when I press the keys, it all gets reversed. The sound of loneliness.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagen on KOPN 89.5 FM.
You are listening to KOPN Radio Orbit. This is Mike Hagen, and it's just after midnight on August the 30th. And we've got a wonderful show to finish up the night here. For the next couple hours, we're going to be talking to my guest, John Depew. I've got John on the line here. We'll bring him on in just a moment. But he is the discoverer and author of Coral Castle Code. And it is an amazing story, and we're not going to waste a whole lot of time talking about John. He's, in his own words, a simple guy with a complicated message, and we're going to do our best to communicate this to the rest of you. So without further delay, John DePew, thanks very much for being here. Welcome to Radio Orbit tonight.
Oh, thank you very much, Mike. Glad to be here.
Great, John. I appreciate it. All right. Well, first of all, an amazing story. I'm not sure how much of the introduction that you heard that I did as I was reading along there some of the stuff that I'd gleaned over the last week or so. But certainly something very remarkable going on here. And there was some secret or some particular methodology that Mr. Leedskalnin used in order to build this amazing structure there in Florida and then move the whole thing. So what we're going to do is talk with you about how you think he did that. So for everybody who's out there, one more time, the website is www.coralcastlecode.com. And from that front page, John, what do? You just click on, I think there are two possible links on that front page. You click on your name. Is that correct?
You just click on the picture.
Okay, so we click on the picture. It says Coral Castle. And so I think the best way to do this is probably just sort of follow along with with the website. And for people who are not able to watch their computers, I'll do my best to sort of explain what I'm looking at here as we go along. Okay. All right. First of all, I got to ask the question: how did you even get interested in this whole thing?
Well, it started early in my life, just being very curious about nature, and it's been a long road. I almost gave up a couple times. Finally, through experimentation and constantly thinking about it, kind of a compulsion, I finally found a visual code, and it's the mathematical formula for creation.
All right. Hey, do me a favor, John. Get a little closer to your phone there, if you can.
Okay.
Yeah, that's much better. Okay. All right. So if we start
basically
out,
the Holy Grail.
Right. I mean, at the top of your website, you make a statement. It says, here it is.
I hate to say that, but that's really what it is.
All right. Well, let's start off with the code.
Code is basically Ed's leaving us with the mathematical formula for creation, but he's leaving it with us in a visual form. All of sacred geometry, all of true sacred geometry is really a lost science, and it's representing two magnetic currents and neutral particles of matter.
Okay.
So the ancients knew all this. That's a fact.
And how did was this encoded in ancient writings and this sort of thing?
Well, yeah, on my webpage you'll see, many, many different displays of it.
Okay. Now, Ed Leedskalnin, though, did some writing of his own. Is that correct?
Yes.
And he left a book, or a number of books, I guess, that he had written about this stuff. In the article that we started the show with, I mentioned that that he was very interested in the workings of the universe and all this sort of thing. So, the clue that you're talking about, this code, was that from one of his books or something like that?
Yeah, the cover of one of his books right before he died.
And this is the two sort of serpents that are facing one another?
Exactly. And two serpents is a good description because many of the ancient cultures represented it that way.
Yeah, and we see that in lots of different... we see that, I think, of the caduceus right off the bat, the medical symbol that I think is still used by the AMA.
Exactly.
And it also reminds me of DNA now that I...
It is DNA.
Really?
Yeah. It's any part of creation, that's what I'm trying to say. It's the biggest message there is. Nobody will believe it right now, but people are starting to wake up right now. Three things that make up everything, and that's a North Pole magnet, a South Pole magnet, and neutral particles of matter, they both have as a common core.
Okay.
That's also, you can consider a particle of sunlight. Light is just an obstruction of magnetic current. Magnetic current can't run alone. It has to have both magnets, both types of magnets to run. So that proves there's no electrons. Electrons are really both kinds of magnets. And that's what's really leading everybody the wrong way.
All right, so let's get back to the Coral Castle. So the Coral Castle code, it's not a hoax then, or it's not a made-up thing?
No, believe me, I wouldn't waste my time.
Right, if the people out there do the work for themselves, and...
Yeah, there's a hidden brilliance in this code that I can't even do justice with. I do my best, but I still have a lot more to do. I'm finding things that will blow your mind. that's why I'm trying to get people to look into it themselves, because it's really the only way to see it.
All right, and you actually make a note of that on the website. As I was reading, you say to whoever out there, skeptics or otherwise, don't dismiss or judge something if you're not willing to do the work yourself to find out if it's really true or false. And I think that's good advice for sort of everything. So, all right, so as we go down these images here, I see the sword, or I guess it's called the Secrets of Solomon, and it's a picture of a sword. What is that about?
Yeah, that would represent the Secrets of Solomon. You've heard of the Knights of Templar and all that.
Sure.
Their biggest secret is this code, unfortunately, for me.
What does that mean?
That means that the Holy Grail, everybody thinks is really a cup, is really this code, this mathematical formula for creation. It represents every part of creation, every bound structure, every molecule. Every molecule, every atom is structured, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's holding that structure together? Two magnetic currents. That's my point. It's the base of energy.
Okay. All right. Well. No. I was curious.
No, I'm not. I'm not being argumentative.
No. I'm with you, and I appreciate it. I mean, it's amazing to me.
I get too passionate when I talk about it.
Well, no, it's good. Hey, it's good, and don't worry. We got plenty of time. We can hash this out, and get into the details, and you can talk as deeply about it as you want. That's what we really want to do. I want to understand it. So if I question or whatever, it's just because I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
No. I enjoy it.
Now. My question was that you mentioned you said unfortunately for me.
Well,
what
you know,
do you mean? Are you being threatened or
imagine,
something? Or?
Right.
Well, I guess I
can. I don't really want to get into details about that kind of stuff, just because I don't want to push people the wrong way.
Okay. Well, let's not then. If you don't want to talk about that, let's talk about the code itself and what's going on here. So, all right. So we have the Secrets of Solomon. We have the ancient Celtic version of the Sweet 16, which is sort of a complex Celtic cross, and that
really is representing the timing of the sun.
Now that has there's an image that's sort of similar to that on one of the doors. Is that correct? Of the castle. What is the connection there?
That's the same connection as magnetic currents. The sun is ignited by magnetic currents. The sun is matter obstructing a stream of two magnetic currents, and that stream is coming from the center of our galaxy. But, you know, our center of our galaxy is connected to other galaxies.
Sure.
Its center. All the systems are connected through their center, which is really important. And they set up grid patterns. So really, all of the universe is set up in a grid pattern, structured.
Is this idea of sort of wheels within wheels?
Orbits within orbits, vortexes within vortexes.
Okay.
Different ways to look at it.
Ad infinitum. In other words, out basically to infinity and then back down to infinity, right?
And that's what this mathematical formula is. I'm just showing it in a visual form because that's the way I am. I'm not really a mathematical person. But
uh-huh,
I recognize
uh-huh.
its significance and what it is in this code.
Well, and the significant part of that is that it is being communicated through imagery historically as well. In other words, our ancestors knew this.
Part of creation, isn't it? Any structure is representing the interaction of these two individual magnets. You can't have structure if you don't have that. What's holding it together? What's holding you together? Look at your skin. You see each of those little dots. If you really look at them, you'll see a grid pattern connecting each one.
That's true.
That's the same thing. But it's in all of nature. You'll start examining nature differently after you go through my webpage.
Well,
I'm just skimming the surface. I have a lot more to do and a lot more to show, but you know, I'm limited on my resources and time.
Right. Well, it is interesting to me because I did a show with a physicist a few weeks ago who's a real forward-thinking gentleman. His name is Nassim Haramein, and he has he's written a paper that he calls The Origin of Spin. And he made me aware of something that you just... That you just made me aware of again. It's that everything is in motion.
Yes.
Even if it appears to be material and static, well, if you look close enough, everything is spinning. All these molecules.
If it wasn't, there would be no change.
All right. So Ed apparently
that goes for a electron tube right there. You just hit it when you said that. You wouldn't have any change in the electron tube if something wasn't coming through it. It's not containing You know what I'm saying? There's energy coming through that tube. It's not, you know, it's coming through that vacuum. Otherwise, it wouldn't be any change in the cathode. The cathode, the stream is really just particles of matter, you know, really small pieces of both magnets and the matter that the cathode is made of.
All right, well,
sorry.
No, it's fascinating, but let's continue along
right.
here, okay?
Go to the number 9.
Okay, number 9, it says...
all of those things are representing magnetic currents.
All right, and these are all these different descriptions, or all these different images that, sort of historical images, including things like the yin and yang symbol from China, mandalas, and sort of... flowered patterns, which remind me, a lot of these remind me of sort of crop formations now that you mention it.
Oh, exactly, they are.
Amazing. All right, so these things are represented both historically and in nature, everywhere we see them, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Mayan calendar and all that stuff. All of it, basically. That's why I can't cover all of that. I'm trying to get so many more people involved.
Right. All right, so the idea is that there are two individual magnetic currents, and then there are neutral, you mentioned neutral particles of matter.
And that's what they orbit as a common core.
All right, so the neutral particles of matter are sort of the common core, and then the two currents orbit around that.
Right, so that'll give you a different understanding of what sunlight really is. Sunlight really is the neutral particles of matter because of the obstruction it's creating of those magnetic currents coming from the center of our galaxy, do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So when they hit that mass, they hit that obstruction, the neutral particles come out in the straight streams and the magnets orbit around them. And that's where you go back to your medical symbol, the staff and the two...
Amazing. All right, so let's continue with these images. Again, just more examples, at least for the next few, of architectural examples of these things, sort of, you know, the cathedrals, it reminds me of again, and this idea of books in stone, that these secrets are embedded in architecture and in symbology all around, and typically in these ancient...
And rubbed in your face.
Right. Hide in plain
sight.
Still
going on. There's people that do know this. That's why I said unfortunately.
Right.
Right.
And there are people, and certainly there are other... Go ahead,
really
I'm sorry.
Sad. It makes it really sad that the way things are in the world right now, that they're that selfish to hold back at this point. It's really pathetic to me.
Yeah, in other words, if these things really are what we think they are, that they change the whole game, and they make
right.
they basically give us the ability to solve at least a good portion of our problems.
But obviously nobody wants that.
Well, I think a lot of people do, but unfortunately... Yeah, most people that would probably want something like that apparently are the ones that don't even have any knowledge of it.
Right, that's what my whole purpose is.
Right. Well, good. All right, this is great that we're doing this then. So, all right, again, we have this magnetic relationship. And
it's the base.
Right, okay, and this is the base.
You can't go any down any farther than that.
All right, now I also see an image here of... a dream catcher, a sort of Native American symbol. And
yeah, I'm just trying to cover all the different cultures, you know, represent, because there's more even than this.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't, you know, I don't have room, I always say, for all of them, but I just try to show people that it's in every culture. It's an ancient science that was lost, you know, and hidden. So.
And is it found mostly in nature-based indigenous cultures, or is it found, of course, we find it in some of the European stuff as well, right?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it pretty much in all of them.
Okay. All right, so it's not limited to any particular... it just seems to have been lost. It had to have been relatively recently, then, that it was lost, it seems.
Yeah. I don't know. They probably carried on a lot of the different aspects of it without realizing what they really represented.
Interesting. Yeah, good point, actually. All right, so Ed Leedskalman, he revealed... this code, he left all of these clues around, apparently. I mean, because he put a lot of this stuff into his own work as well, and then onto the book. And these two shapes, for everybody, if you see the basis of this, it looks like, it looks like two sort of serpents that are sort of coiled back and looking at one another. And if you could picture a heart, if you could picture sort of a classic shape of a heart, and outline it. The two outermost sort of pieces of the heart, if you sort of cut away the middle, would form these sort of serpentine curves that go down each side. And that's sort of what it looks like with the spirals on either end. And they face one another. Apparently, this is there's a positive and a negative, or for lack of a better description, there's a positive and a negative aspect to either of these.
Visual magnet.
Right.
And when they're in concentration, they run in streams. So you can consider those two little arcs, you know, concentrated streams.
Right. And as a matter of fact, when you start to combine those, that's when all of this amazing imagery starts to sort of come out.
But you know how that came about was when I built Ed's wheel.
No,
I
didn't.
I got a whole page of experiments that I did with that. I'm the first one to recreate the wheel, and I'm working on a full scale right now.
Well, tell us what that is. What do you mean?
It's a magnetic wheel that represents this code.
Ed's wheel. What did he do?
Well, that's why he wouldn't let people in his chambers, because his wheel was in there. His wheel was the main component of his work.
And so the wheel is the way that he generated
current generator. Right.
Okay, he generated the current that allowed him to do the things that he did.
Well, you can consider an orbit generator. You know, creating an orbit as large as you want, and then releasing or breaking that orbit, and using and utilizing the magnets that are coming out of it. And when I say orbit, I mean a structure, a flower pattern. A flower pattern is really a standing wave. You can consider it if you want to,
mm-hmm.
but I consider it more of a living structure of energy. Sweet 16 really represented a whole structure of energy in that fashion I just described.
All right, so...
See later in the page.
Right. All right, so the clue that he leaves us is these two serpents and that represent these hidden magnetic current patterns of nature. He called this thing the cosmic force. And, again, you mentioned flower. So this is what some of the ancients called the flower of life. This is where the golden section comes from. It's insane.
All sacred geometry is really representing magnetic current.
Okay.
People don't realize that yet.
And amazing. He just sort of snuck it on the cover of this book.
Right. And I looked at that for so long. And I mean, I've read this book over and over and over and over. One day it just hit me. And I said, could it be? And I started working with it because I'm a graphic designer. So I'm very familiar with geometry. And before all this, I've searched through endless sacred manuscripts and whatever I could dig up.
Right.
So I had that, you know, imprinted in my brain. So when I started putting that together, I realized right away what it was. But then I found much, much more. I can't even go into all of it. It's crazy.
Well,
code itself is so brilliantly designed. It's a mathematical formula for creation. It's so endless, and the things that I could tell you about that I'm finding are amazing.
Well, we'll get into some of that. Now, this book, it was titled Magnetic Current. Is that right?
Yeah.
So he wrote.
So yeah, right on the cover. What do you see on the cover? You see the
right. I see the words magnetic current, and then I see the little symbol that we've been talking about.
Right.
Were there more clues in the book, or is the book?
It's hard to understand.
So the book is misdirection, maybe, and everything's on the cover that you need to know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And that you're supposed to look at those two shapes facing east.
Mm.
So that tells you where this Earth's two magnetic currents are coming from.
Hmm.
Direction of the currents from the center of our galaxy are going through the sun, and then to us. The matter that's coming from the sun is being built up here. We're in a construction process. The sun's in a destruction process.
Hmm.
But that doesn't stay the same. Eventually, that'll change. If we were positioned where the sun is, we would be a star.
Wow. All right. Well, that blows me away. So let's move along here. Let's see, what time is it? We got 25 after. We'll go a few more minutes here, and we'll look at a few more of these things, and then we'll take a music break. But when this really gets cool is when you start to connect them, as you did. You've done some great images here with these two serpentine shapes that we mentioned, and then when you start to build them together, then all these fractal, incredible things start to come out of them.
It's amazing what's in there. I'm telling you, all of sacred geometry is in there. So everybody out there interested in sacred geometry and they think they know something about it, they really need to take a look at this because they're not going to find anything better.
Right.
It holds everything.
I wonder
how... every part of it in there.
I wonder how the heck Leedskalnin came across it.
It's an ancient knowledge, and he comes from Latvia, and that's an ancient culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine he had some clues from there, either a religion or a... somebody else in his family or something.
So
he found it on his own after that, you know, I don't know, but it's definitely...
Right. And all of sacred geometry, as you said, is sort of a representation of these two opposing magnetic fields.
It is a representation of it, yeah. It's just broken up now and interpreted, you know, without that.
Right. And if you see some of these images, I hope people are looking along with us because it really is astonishing.
It's pi. It's perfect pi. Pi is an ancient science that represents magnetic currents. People somehow lost that or, you know, have hidden that from people for a while now.
Now, what about science and religion? All of these things are connected then through this.
This is the Holy Grail. Is that religious?
Well, it is, I guess. And you're right. A lot of people think of the Holy Grail as this physical thing, this cup.
No,
but certainly, you know, there have been...
The shape that represents this shape.
You're right, and it is. It is. I didn't think of it that way, but yeah.
Trust me, it is. I've been doing it long enough. I know it is. It is DNA. I've already done all that, too. I'm working on a lot of 3D models now. I'm tired of the flat images, so I'm trying to represent it better. But I've already proven it to myself. I'm just trying to prove it to other people.
Right.
People take a look, they'll see. It all lines up.
All right, so how does this tie in with the ley lines? Because I know that... I'm sorry?
They're built into this code. When I make a whole structure, there are all these failure fixes built into the code that are so ingenious that it will blow your mind once you start doing it. You'll cascade the patterns across each other. You'll see all these different ways that they can connect if they get a chance. If they miss a chance, then they still get some more chances down the road and have a perfect connection that connect each center. Each center is connected at each formation. You understand? That's how they feed each other, and that's how when you pinch your skin, you feel it. That's how it communicates with the rest of your body, the centers. The centers of each individual little magnetic pattern system.
And again, this idea of connection, everything being connected.
Everything is connected.
Well, I'm with you. But as far as the ley line thing goes, I don't understand how that falls into it. In other words, location is somehow relevant?
It all depends on the frequency of the pattern that's being generated. These patterns, you get different types of ley line. They're very flexible, but they all connect each center, and there's all these failure fixes that they can connect at different angles and different, you know, different ways.
Okay, and then...
still all work out to have these tubes that feed the center. These tubes are what I believe the neutral particles of matter travel on through each system.
And this is the way thinking apparently happens as well, then.
And that's exactly, I'm sure. Your thinking is based on magnetic energy.
Right. I think that's something that most people would agree
with.
Wow. Okay, well, look, let's let people digest that for a few minutes, okay? And we'll come back and we'll try to clarify some stuff and we'll get deeper into this. All right, John? All right, this is Mike Hagen, and you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. My guest is John DePew, and we're talking about the Coral Castle Code. If you didn't hear the introduction of the show, the Coral Castle is an amazing structure that was built by a guy named Edward Leetskelman 90 years ago, plus or minus. And the way he did it has remained a secret for a long, long time. And I'm talking with John DePew about what that secret may have been. So stick around. We'll talk with John more in just a few minutes. In the meantime, here's Carbon Leaf. Let's raise the roof.
much dreaming to bear. Fearful and frantic, hopeless and a romantic. Inspired but tired, I run this wide open course like the sagging spirit of an older horse. Dance till you fall off, till you die, shut your mouth. Raise the roof. Dance till you fall off, till you die, shut your mouth. Raise the roof.
Hi, this is Jay Widener, and you're listening to the Alchemical Airwaves of Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM.
All right, this is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. It's about 12:35 in the AM, and my guest John DePue is on the line with me, and we're talking to him live from Florida about the Coral Castle Code and the amazing discoveries and revelations brought about by this work of Edward Leedskalnin, the builder and designer and fashioner of this amazing structure in Florida. And the castle itself, apparently, and John, let's make sure you're still with us here. Hi.
Hey, Hannah.
All right, good. What it turns out is that the story is not the castle itself. The castle is sort of this novel bookmark to say, hey, look at me, and to get some attention. But it turns out that the secret, or the greater secret, or secrets, is embedded in some of the writings that Mr. Leedskalnin did and left with us after he died, and that's what John and I are talking about tonight.
But as far as his castle goes, don't mistake the castle as just being statue. It could even be an amplifier the way he designed it. He designed it according to his knowledge. The way it's positioned is following this code. So just be aware of that.
Okay. Hey, John, I tell you what.
Brilliant design.
I think that the phone situation, the fact that you're a little bit quiet here, I think it's I think it's on my end. I don't think it's on your end.
Okay.
And so what I'm going to do is put a piece of music on real fast here, and I'm going to call you back and try to get a better connection. It'll just take me a second here. So let's do that, and because I want everyone to be able to hear what you're saying, and I've got you cranked.
Sure.
I've got you cranked here on my end, and I've still got sort of a low signal, and I don't think it's on your end. So just hang in there, and we'll take care of this little issue. And
hang up for now?
Yeah, go ahead, and I'll be right back with you, okay? All right, this is Mike. You all heard that, and we'll come back in just a minute with John DePew as we can get this little situation worked out, because I know he's not loud enough for you guys to hear. Back in just a few minutes. This is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.
Cha mama mucha na piu ya ren chi mama tai ta
All right, there's a good little sneak peek of some cool music from my friends Jeff and William from Yacht Jai, making music, killer stuff down there in Phoenix, Arizona, and they've got a tour that I think is starting in the colleges out on the East Coast. I got to talk to Jeff again one of these days. But anyway, this is Mike, and I'm back, and I think we've got John with us again here, so we're going to see if we've got a little bit of a better signal there. Hey, John, you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, one more time. Yeah, actually, I still need to have you speak up, I think.
Okay, I'll put my face right in here.
Yeah, I don't know if you got a volume thing on your phone or not.
You hear me breathe, though.
That's all right. You're sounding good. Okay, so we've established that this simple pattern and this combination of two magnetic fields, a negative and a positive, wrapped around or orbiting around these neutral particles, is the secret that Leedskalnin leaves for us. Now, you were just mentioning that I shouldn't discount the castle, that it really wasn't just this novel thing, that there's obviously some important stuff going on there too. So let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah, because I mean, the question is, how did he actually do this? I guess we're going to get to that because this solution that he presents obviously is able to be translated into some kind of a technology that can actually be controlled and then used to do whatever you need to do.
When you run magnetic currents through an object without any obstruction at all, no resistance, that's superconductivity.
Right.
So that's what levitates things. But his structure, all right, so where are the currents coming to this planet from? the sun, but, you know, first from the center of the galaxy, then to the sun.
Okay, okay.
And to us, and that's from the east. His opening is northeast, and it's basically a capture. To me, it represents capturing energy.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole castle seems to be an amplifier of a pattern. And a pattern can form from capturing that energy, and that pattern becomes a standing pattern.
Okay.
And within that pattern, they're structured just like these patterns. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So he can, you know, utilize different parts of that. But just having the understanding of this energy shows that, you know, if he understood this, he understood everything, because this is everything. This is the base of everything. So his knowledge surpasses everybody I've seen, really.
Right, and as you say, when you start to look closely at these things...
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, everything shows up.
Oh, no, see, I don't play around. I'm not making these pretty pictures.
Right.
Each one of these is a connection. It's a circuit. Okay, look at those two tips of those two serpents as connections. Okay, I make each one of those connections individually to make these patterns.
Right, so they're right, I understand.
Brilliant. I mean, it is the mathematical formula for creation. I've already proven it to myself. I know for sure. I'm just trying to get everybody else to see it.
Right.
Look at picture 33 for me.
All right, let's see. Let's go up to 30.
And you understand how things are created and how they start to bind together. And this is just one type of binding. Like I said before, they have all of these built-in failure fixtures, and each one creates a different type of structure and grid pattern.
Define for me what you mean by failure fixture so people understand what that means.
Failure to connect. Say two whole magnetic structures coming towards each other and they cascade over each other, but the magnetic energy, some of it attracts and some of it repulses and some of it doesn't have either.
Right.
Well, those points of attraction, if they miss, say it's moving too fast or a different vibration, it could miss that connection. Well, it still has plenty of chances to have a perfect connection to feed each center.
Mm.
Understand? And by saying feeding each center, that's your grid. Those straight lines that crisscross into each center, that's your grid. And that's why I believe neutral particles, that's their traveling section. That's the way they travel, in a straight line. Because they don't have any obstruction because they're neutral.
Right. Okay, I'm looking at this this image number 33.
And that's what a black hole is. It's a lack of obstruction of concentrated magnetic current. If there was matter in the way, it would ignite into a light.
Huh.
It's pretty simple, isn't it?
And it's beautiful, by the way. You know, these things...
holy.
Right. I mean, that it's absolutely beautiful. Now, when...
I'm skimming the surface, let me tell you. This goes way deeper.
And these are... And the images that we're looking at here, and I know you do have some 3D stuff here, but the stuff right now that we're looking at is only two-dimensional.
Right.
But you can almost...
Feels 3. You can see...
I mean, you almost 3D. Can tell what's going on as these
things... It communicates with you because you're made from that same code. I'm telling you, these are deep, man. I've been through it for so long, it blows my mind still, and I've been doing it for a long time.
And, you know, let's jump back just for a second. You're down there in Florida, is that right?
Yeah, but...
And did you pretty much grow up down there, or have you been living down there?
No, I came down here in my, you know, my beginning of my teens.
All right, but you've been interested in this. You've been working on this for a long, long time.
I've been working on understanding things for a long time.
Right. Okay. And this thing just happened to be one that was.
I just found it finally.
Right.
And in an unexpected place, you know, I really didn't expect to find as much as I did, and it, you know, you don't expect to find this, you know.
Yeah, we never do. We always seem to find things in the most unlikely of places. No doubt about that.
It was my experiments and stuff that really finally paid off for me. Because, you know, I'm pretty close to. Doing a lot of things that, you know, haven't been done before.
Well, good. I tell you what, if we ever needed it, if we ever needed something to upset the apple cart and something to, you know, to really...
That's what I'm trying to do.
...take us to the next level, boy, we need it now. And I tell you what, I'm fully behind you and anybody else who's got that same idea in mind.
Well, that's why I'm open to share it.
All right. Yeah, we're looking at now... What is squaring of the circle? What is that all about?
Let's talk about that for a minute. Geometry.
What's that?
That represents sacred geometry and how magnetic currents set up in patterns, how they flow. See, Ed understood how to make magnetic currents flow through a wire without restriction, and they flow in a vortex motion, a right-hand twist.
Okay.
The way we run it, we break it up, so we create all this friction and heat and misuse of the same two things. Physicists focus on the negative, and electricians focus on the positive. They really need to get together.
Yeah, no kidding. I agree with that as well. Okay. All right, let's move along here then. So the fact that he built the Coral Castle where he did was directly related to these patterns. In other words, there are certain places where the things that he wanted to do became possible. Is that right?
I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. And once he determines that, he
utilizes
This energy, and how does he focus it? How does he actually utilize it?
That's what his magnetic wheel would be. It would be more of the concentrator, the orbit builder, you might want to call it.
Okay, so this requires
Page two.
Okay, let's go there, because this requires some more.
I'd like to look at the grids before you go there, because they're actually on this page.
Okay, all right.
Where are you at right now?
Take me there. I am on, I'm at image number 57.
Okay, I'll back up a little bit. Go back to 41.
Okay.
Now let's jump you straight to it. This is just one example. The more...
Right, okay, I've got it. Let me open that one up here. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it. Now this again...
Look at those straight lines. That's just one part of it. Okay, they break up into more triangles that go down even farther into bigger geometry.
I can see some of it, yeah.
But each one, see how they feed each center?
Mm-hmm.
And now look at that picture, now compare it to your skin, you'll see how your skin works.
All right, and then you have a couple images. Yes.
Now you understand acupuncture a little bit better too, right?
Right, because everything is connected, and if you can...
They're breaking up, they block... somebody that really knows what they're doing can break blockages that are blocking the center, you know, connection.
Right, and it's all about knowing these sort of sneaky little patterns that move their way.
Grid patterns, yeah.
You know...
It's in all of nature. Is every single structure has to have these.
It is amazing.
Right.
Pray to gosh that people are out there looking on their computers. You know, the other thing, John, that it makes me think about is, well, two things. I think about neurology and the way the brain works.
It's everything. That's what I'm saying. It is the energy that makes everything happen.
Right. I understand. But I'm trying to give some reasonable analogies so people can conceptualize this, because for you, you've been working on this for a long time, and it's so obvious to you. But trust me, it is very deep stuff and not...
I run into a lot of problems.
Yeah, I'm sure. So
actually, I'm pretty burnt out on it too.
Well, hang with us here, because it is deep stuff, but it can be explained, and I think metaphorically is a good way to do it sometimes. Lots of people have heard stories about how the brain can reroute messages. For example, if there's a part of the brain that's damaged, and in fact, the World Wide Web, the internet, is another example. Sort of a fractal, a large-scale fractal example of the same thing, that the way an email gets from me to you, John, is it can happen in lots of different ways. There are many different paths from my email box to yours, and that all depends on these different dynamics and chaotic mathematical situations that are happening on the web, and the same thing happens in our own neural systems. But I think that's a reasonable description, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, about what we're talking about here, is that there are certain paths that become available and certain paths are not. But when a path is blocked at one point, it can move through another route to find another way.
And the amount of routes and the way they're laid out is dictated by the dynamics of the pattern itself.
Okay.
And what's interesting right there when we're saying that, say you have some dynamic patterns formed already as a structure, you can create a frequency that layers over top of it new patterns that don't interrupt those first patterns. I've already proven that in experiments. It's really interesting.
Give me an idea when you talk about experiments.
You got to go to page two then. Okay, let's just skip to there then.
Okay, let's go. Am I getting ahead of ourselves?
No, I showed you the grid. That's what I wanted to show you.
Okay, all right. So please continue. Okay. Let's go here. All right, this will take a few minutes to load up here. So, because these sites are pretty image intense.
Yeah, I tried to break them up a little bit compared to before, but they're still pretty heavy, I imagine.
All right, so so Leet Skelnin, as I follow down the page here, it says that Leet Skelnin mentioned that magnetic currents enter and circulate in a metal bar, for example, through its center and then out through its ends.
Right.
Why is that significant?
Well, first of all, the metal isn't the magnet. That's where a lot of people make their mistake. The metal, different types of metal structures, you know, interact with the magnets that are already in the surrounding and flowing through everything.
Hmm.
There's magnets flowing through every single structure.
Right, everything is magnetic.
Right.
We
the metal is just
that.
Metal, and the magnet is flowing through it. And different things, you know, allow different amounts to flow through it in different ways. For example, if you're flowing into a metal bar, it's flowing through the center out to its end. Well, everything, you know, seems to be connected by its center, so that's what I would.
All right. Again, yeah, and the important thing about that is that it can be extended and reduced. To the extreme. In other words, it describes everything from the microcellular to galaxies and superclusters and
right.
everything else all the way out.
Everything, even black holes, everything.
Right, and everything in between.
Yep.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to talk about these experiments that you have done to sort of prove this to yourself or whatever.
You can see Ed's wheel there, so you got a good look at that, right?
Well, I'm still sort of loading.
Look at 104.
Okay, let's see.
Is it still loading?
Yeah, it's still sort of loading up here.
Well, anyway, it's a magnetic wheel that Ed created that inspired me to build my first one, and now my full-scale second one that I'm still working on. But
okay, what was Ed's wheel, first of all? What was it made out of?
Well, I don't want to give all that away right now because I'm still working on my second one.
Okay, but can you give us an idea? I mean, is it made out of a natural material? Or
yes, it's all natural.
Right.
It's designed.
Okay, I'm looking at it now. Okay.
I'm going to pay attention to the design. It's based on this code.
All right, and it looks sort of like a gear almost. And if I had to guess, I'd say it's made out of stone. Now, is this an actual picture of it or is this just an image that you made?
That's a picture of it that I took.
Okay, so that's an actual picture of it from the castle itself.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, it's a brilliant design. This guy, man, I'm telling you, he was a super genius.
Is just looking at these things, and I tell you, when you start looking at those grid patterns, that's
it's like an artificial atom, this wheel.
Well, let me describe it real fast to people, what I'm looking at here. Can you give us an idea on size?
Oh, geez. It's approximately 18 inches across, I imagine.
All right, so not huge by any means.
No, it's not huge. You can see him standing next to it.
Yeah, in that
pretty
top
small guy too. So.
Yeah, in that top photo, in photo 103, you can see him standing right over it.
Right.
All right, so this thing is about a foot and a half wide. It looks like a perfect circle, basically, that has, for lack of a better description, it has gear teeth
magnets.
Sort of
magnets. They're
okay,
magnets.
All right, so those are magnets, but they look like gear teeth that are sort of
right.
notched out.
Right.
Now, inside of this pattern is, oh gosh, a sort of soft...
It's concrete.
But the shape, it looks like a soft cross.
Right, well see, now that's, you just hit the important factor. That's a four-leaf clover. Now,
right.
See, now, do you understand why a four-leaf clover is sacred? Why people consider it good luck? It really is representing sacred geometry, which is representing magnetic current. So that's a very big part of its design.
Okay, and then as we move toward the center of the wheel, we see more and more of the patterns that we've been talking about before.
You consider this wheel an orbit generator, okay? He could generate, and as perpetual motion that he created to do it too. He could get it going and keep it going.
And again, based upon where it was and how it was designed.
Well, the way he designed it, definitely.
Right.
It's a brilliant design.
Okay. All right, so using this wheel now, somehow, he's able to...
create an orbit.
Okay, now let's try to clarify that a little bit. Create an orbit. What exactly do you mean? An orbit...
standing wave pattern. One of these patterns. Picture one of these patterns.
Okay.
And then breaking that pattern and releasing the energy and doing something with that energy. We're not breaking that. You can do different things with it, just like nature does. You know, it really depends on what you want to do.
And the wheel was somehow the way to modulate that.
To manipulate.
Manipulate.
Yeah, the energy is already around everything.
Right. And the particular energy that was there at that place.
Well, I think the way he had it set up, I think he utilized that wheel with that setup.
Right. In other words, it was sort of tweaked for that location, et cetera, that ties back into the ley lines and all this sort of thing.
Yeah, if you look at his building and the way the castle is and where the wheel is mounted, it's a permanent mounting, that wheel, where he had it. It wasn't. He didn't move it around.
All right.
That is very suspicious as far as him utilizing the flow of energy that was going through his whole castle.
Now, what about when he moves the thing, though? He moved the whole thing to another, to a full...
No, he didn't. There's different places that say that. He actually just moved some key pieces.
Oh, okay.
The obelisk and a few other ones.
Okay, all right. So he didn't disassemble and move the whole castle.
No way, no.
All right, good. I'm glad, because there were people that... I had some email questions here that said, how the hell did he move the whole thing?
No, he just moved some of his favorite pieces that he already made before. You can tell the difference by the structure of the rock or the coral.
Okay.
What's holding that coral together as, you know, as coral, as a, you know, as a rock?
Right, as an object in reality.
Right. It's an atomic binding of polarities, and he understood polarities, atomic polarities, better than anybody I've ever seen in my life. So if he's not using that to do this work, it sounds ridiculous to me.
Right, so it certainly appears that he would be using this secret in order to build what he built.
I can't believe that he wouldn't. How could you not?
Yeah, it seems, certainly that would be the
right. And what is superconductivity than what this is? This is representing that. It's so obvious to me anyway.
And so using that, it basically is a way to eliminate gravity or a way to...
Well, that's what gravity is. Gravity comes from the center of our planet. There's more magnets coming into the planet than are getting out.
And that creates an attraction inward.
The magnets are coming out or pulling down the magnets they first come in contact with, and the magnets they first come into contact with are everything that's a structure, including you and me.
Including you and me, yeah. So a key sort of to this whole thing...
is knowing how to run it through a wire, really.
Right, but the greater implication is that the energy which gives us life.
Oh, it is life.
It is life.
Right, and that was one of his books. I should have mentioned that already.
What was one of his books?
Vegetable, mineral, and animal life. Those three things are all because of, you know, magnet. And that is life. That's why he was trying to say it.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, John, we're at the top of the hour here. Let's take another break, and we'll come back and talk more about your experiments and how you were able to prove to yourself that this stuff was bearing out. I can't overstate the grid patterns and the complexity of the things that are coming out of these connections. That, as John has pointed out, that he's made one on top of the other, and literally all of these things do connect. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So if you get if you do have the opportunity, make sure you're on the web and go to coralcastlecode.com, or you can get there from my website at radioorbit.com. All right, John, we'll be back in just a few minutes, and we'll continue this conversation, all right? All right, this is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. Let's listen to Foo Fighters, sort of digging this new CD from them, and this is a song that is called Cold Day in the Sun. Yeah, that's the one we'll play. That's a pretty fitting tune for tonight's conversation. So, anyway, my guest is John DePew. We're talking about the Coral Castle Code and just amazing amazing stuff here. So we'll be back to continue that conversation in just a few minutes. This is Mike Hagen. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.
Yeah.
All right, that's Foo Fighters from their new CD, In Your Honor. And that's called Cold Day in the Sun. All right, this is Mike Hagen. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, diverse talk, music of the world. It's more than radio. It's listener-sponsored community radio serving Wooldridge and Jeff City and Kingdom City and Ladonia, Fayette, lots of places around Mid-Missouri and all around this region. So glad you're with me tonight, and hope you'll stick around for the remainder of the show. We've got another 55 minutes or so with my guest tonight, John DePew, and John is an expert and a very interesting gentleman that we've been talking to with regard to the mystery of Coral Castle, this an enigmatic architectural feat of brilliance that was done many, many years ago, and the man, Edward Leedskalnin, who was able to do this somehow mysteriously, and we're sort of unraveling that mystery. So, John, we still have you with us here?
You sure do.
Great. Okay, before the break, we were starting to talk about some experiments that you had done to work on this. Now, I'm looking at a couple of more images here of Ed Leedskalnin's wheel.
Okay.
And there is a pipe, some sort of a metal pipe, apparently.
It runs down underground.
Yeah, it runs down underneath the wheel and stuff. And you mentioned not to take that for granted. What do you make of that?
I'll skim back up to the picture with Ed next to the wheel, and you'll see that pipe right there.
Right, all the way on the top here.
You see how in that picture you see how it's connected to a large mass of iron?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's a permanent setup. That's not something they moved around. That's what I'm talking about, creating a large orbit. When you have energy and you use energy, you're creating an orbit of magnetic energy, and then you're breaking that orbit, and then those magnets run out, and you utilize those magnets. In a coil, they run out of the the iron core into the coil and then run out to do work. That's the same principle here, but he's utilizing the earth and sky. There's one magnet going up and one magnet coming down. So I believe he's, making an orbit, a large orbit, and then breaking that orbit, or running that whole orbit out through the wire without restriction.
Right. Again, creating that superconductive.
Exactly, at room temperature. That's probably the only difference.
Right. All right, yeah, because this thing, we have to remember that it produces both positive and negative magnetic currents, apparently just like, in other words, that is nature.
Right. And electricity is, its base is magnetic current.
Okay.
So with that principle in mind, as far as atomic polarities and aligning them, skim down to the bottom of this page, and you'll see my magnetic wheel down to 115. I want to show you something.
Okay, let's see. Now, as an aside here, I want to mention that sort of modern science tells us that the shell of an atom's energy is different from that of the nucleus or whatever. Ed disagreed with that, or?
Yeah, he said, then how can a metal that comes from the Earth have, two poles? The Earth, everything on the Earth is a part of the Earth. Every polarity that's on those things that are on the Earth are dictated by the polarity of the Earth.
Okay.
Make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does, actually. This stuff, it is starting to make sense to me.
It's hard to get it all out in such a short time. And for me, like I said, recently I've been really extra tired in explaining. I've explained it so many times that it's almost, I don't know, it's really strange the effects it has to you.
Right. No, I mean,
it wears you out.
It's interesting because
you go blank.
Well, one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show is communication and language. And one of the biggest problems with one of the biggest challenges, maybe, if I want to use good language, that we have not just with your discovery here, but with amazing discoveries in general.
Right.
It's that the language required to describe some of these things doesn't really exist yet. Mm-hmm. And trying to move the information from somebody who's familiar with it and with the new language that has to be developed in order to explain it, it becomes really difficult to communicate that to people who are not familiar with it. So you end up with this de facto sort of, you know, these small groups of knowledge holders that are at the leading edges of all these different fields, regardless of whether they're individual private sector people like yourself or whether they're government-funded scientists or whatever. You end up with these sort of de facto secret societies almost in which...
They've started from the beginning, really. It works the other way around. You know, they've, I believe, been manipulating the whole thing to keep it that way.
Well, you're not the only one that has said that.
I hate to say that, but it's true.
Gosh, it's such a...
it's annoying, really.
It really is, and I mean, there are enough people that have made similar comments that, I mean, at what point do we say, hey, you know, what's really going on here? But to me, and tell me if I'd be very interested in your perspective on this, actually. Is it just my naivety, or do things seem to be coming to sort of a critical mass and sort of genies being let out of bottles and some of the stuff sort of coming to the surface that can't be suppressed anymore?
Right, well, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, even if it's risky, I feel like it's worth it.
Well, like I said before, I mean, I'm fully with you, and if there's anything that...
What else could you really, you know, what else could be a better reason to, you know...
Right, I mean, to
die,
be...
really.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, what we're talking about here is really the solution to...
A lot of problems.
A lot of problems,
yeah.
And...
A lot of things.
Okay, image...
Being, you know, treating the planet a lot better.
Right. In other words, we can start to do things cooperatively with the planet, the way that's supposed to be done, as opposed to doing
it. It's good enough for nature. It's good enough for us because we are a part of nature.
We are a part of nature, and there's no question about that. And this is another fundamental problem in the West is that, you know...
The textbooks. People's egos get tied to their textbooks. They think that they're intelligent because, you know, they have good grammar and they read certain textbooks without really even doing anything themselves.
Yeah, wisdom from knowledge through experience, I always talk about being able to actually do things.
Yeah, because really, I'm not an expert. I'm just a simple person, but I didn't listen to anybody else.
Huh.
Except Ed, because I believed him.
Right. Well, that's the first step, probably. All right, so I'm at image number 115, and this is your first magnetic wheel experiment, apparently.
That's right.
All right, so your first wheel here... You discovered Ed's code. You built this wheel.
This wheel is not exactly like Ed's. This is my interpretation. I built this before I even found the code.
Okay, so yeah, this does look physically a little bit different. If I was going to describe this one, it looks like a Native American drum. it has sort of...
I'm not through with it yet. I don't have a four-leaf clover on top and a few other things.
But it looks like we've got the same sort of... These magnets on the outside of it that I would describe as sort of gear teeth, but those are all magnets.
Well, these are actually iron. I used a common iron core. Well, you know, iron can be made to be a magnet, and that's what I did.
Right, right. And again, the magnetism in iron, as you say, doesn't come from the metal itself. It's just sort of a conduit for it.
Exactly.
Okay.
You can manipulate it. You can shift it and concentrate it or take it all the way out.
Right. Okay. All right, so... what did you do, or what have you done with your wheel? Or let me tell you, or at least start at the beginning. What was your first experiment? What were you trying to do? Because you say it was before you even
trying to understand the energy.
But this was before you even had discovered the code.
This is what helped me discover the code.
Helped you discover it. Okay, so tell us about that a little bit.
All right, let me try to think of a simple way to explain it. Well, in one way, it proves the lack of electrons. Okay, what's spinning a motor on its axis, or what's spinning the Earth on its axis, is magnetic currents. And the same with a motor, there's not electrons spinning it. And these experiments prove it. If you go down to, let's see, 117, 118.
Yep, I'm looking at those.
Those are all free spinning, basically homemade magnetic gears that I created. And if you look on top, you'll see the flower type pattern, those bands.
Yes.
Those bands are magnetic bands, and they line up in grid fashion just like the pattern.
Amazing.
And I can space them out in a grid pattern, and they lock into each other.
Creating these more complex patterns that we've seen in the grids.
Creating patterns, but they're also creating... each one of these are free-spinning, I don't know how to describe them, gears, but each one can create power, you understand?
Right, in other words...
So the first gear that's being spun... is being spun by the current or the orbit that I'm creating in the big wheel. Okay, right now in that experiment, I'm utilizing just standard wall currents. Okay, just to create the field.
Right.
I can spin these in any direction, so it's not like the field. It's really just more like a magnet pump. It's supplying the magnets that are being thrown out by the force of the spinning gears.
All right, so
throwing them out and receiving, so it creates a balance between, you know, the cascading effect, just like on a bicycle tire. You know, if you spin a bicycle tire, you see that cascading effect one way and then the other way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the two forces. If you lock that in right in the spot, in the middle, before they cascade one way or the other, that's where these are locked in, and that's where those bands set up.
I see.
So, you know, the gears on the outside are being spun, and they're spinning at the same frequency as the gear that's being spun by the big wheel, but they're getting their energy from the other gear. Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
Right?
I do.
So that's free energy.
Okay, yeah, and it literally sets up a visual signature that you can see when these spectrum bands appear.
Right, and people take that kind of stuff for granted. They just, they don't even look at it.
Huh. Amazing.
It's much more. It goes even way deeper than this.
Right.
Those, I call them magnetic gears because they behave that way. And those bands line up that way.
Right.
Like gears. There's a magnetic flux, you know.
Mm-hmm. And again, those can differ depending on the setup.
How fast you're spinning them.
Right, right.
The faster you spin them, they divide, just like, you know, the mathematical aspects.
Uh-huh. All right. All right, okay, so that's...
so many things to it, really.
No, amazing.
Now go down to the water. Instead of just looking at the gears, go down to the water, and you understand how the grids really behave.
Oh, all right, I'm paging down to that, but now, and this may be something that I may be getting ahead of myself, but there's a Japanese scientist that does some work with what he calls... I don't know exactly what the terminology is, but it's this. He does these water experiments, applying.
Maddox,
I forget his name, but he uses different frequencies and then applies them to water and then looks at the crystalline structure of the water and they take on all of these different these fractal patterns that are just outrageous.
That's the atomic polarities, aligning.
Lining up. And again, they line up in these different...
And if you really know how to do it and you line it up with the Earth the right way, what do you think you have?
I don't know. What do we have?
Something that doesn't resist what's pulling us down.
Mm.
Go down to 182 and you'll see the grids in the water.
Now, these ones that are up here, and I am paging down, but the ones that are up a little bit higher, 120, 121, those are those gears that are spinning again. Is that correct?
Let me go back up here. 121. Yeah, those are the gears I made.
And what are they spinning on? You have them on some sort of a needle or something.
No, that's the shaft of an old motor that I took out of an old motor, and then I modified it.
And just sort of balance those things on top of it.
Oh, they spin like perpetual gyros. They're amazing. I can create axis tilts just like the Earth, reoccurring axis tilts. That's what spins the Earth. The reason it's hot at the end of the summer is because we have more magnetic current at the time, and that's what creates the different weather. Every change, every single change in everything, weather, our bodies, everything is based on the same principles.
Wow, I'm looking at this as I'm paging down here. I'm looking at the...
If you see these in person, I'll send you some movies later on, and you'll enjoy them. They're really interesting to watch.
Yeah, I'm looking at the vortex gears here. That show the tilt. Now, okay,
these are locked in. Okay, they stay there for as long as I leave it on.
And
the ones on the outside are getting their free ride from these gears. You understand?
Right. It's just setting up.
Right. That's not draining from the main wheel.
Right. In other words, they're not even connected to the main wheel.
Right.
Right.
This is just a small example. I've taken it much further than this.
All right, so the main wheel is powered by just a regular 110-volt circuit or something.
Yeah, and it's only it's only taking a tiny bit.
All right, so and that's just, as you say, to set up the original field.
Standing pattern, yeah.
All right, and then from there, as you spin that one, yeah, then all these other ones...
They just lock into each other.
That is outrageous.
I've taken it really far. And believe me, this is just a small example. It's endless. I had it across the whole room before.
What, with all kinds of different...
I had 12 gears in a row powered by one gear, powered by a little pulse of compressed air. It was really cool.
How... I don't get it.
All I needed to do was create one to spin, and I can lock a whole grid pattern of other gears to that one. Like the energy works.
Right, but again, that first one has to stay spinning, though, right?
Yeah, but the amount of energy that you're getting out of it is way past what you're putting into it.
Right, because you can spin all these other ones around.
And each one can create electricity or create, a field. Each one creates a field for the next one.
Amazing.
So it's not pulling off that first one. Only one's pulling off that first one really would be the first one next to it, but that's not even pulling much. Because it's locked into it, it's locked into the flux.
Right. Okay, so the large magnetic wheel creates a field that supplies both kinds of magnetic current, as you say, into the surrounding space. And I'm reading here, the spinning gears are throwing out magnets as they spin, and receiving a new supply from the large mag wheel. The gears can be locked in all directions of rotation. In other words, that is wild. Let me ask you a question about that. Does that mean that if you have a number of gears that are out there spinning, that some can be going different directions than the other ones?
Yeah, I've done that before. I've broken all those rules.
Huh.
If you go into there's another page that has even more other stuff of old experience. When I used to use compressed air more, I used to do some really weird stuff with that. But
what was the reason that you used compressed air? Again, this was just...
I didn't have the generator built yet.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even understand things yet. That's what taught me stuff. I just jumped in full force playing with energy like you would play with clay.
Right.
Just really getting the feel for it without following anything but my gut feelings and things I read from Ed and Tesla, and I'm a big Tesla fan, and Keeley, those people. I've read so much of their stuff that it started really sinking in,
Right.
And all their work is connected.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I got an email from a friend of mine who's a listener of the show who asked if I had an opportunity to ask you about Nikola Tesla and what you thought about him and if you might want to chat about that for a minute, because Tesla, I'm a big fan of his too, and I've always...
Okay, one thing that you really enjoy.
What's that? Go ahead.
There's a 3-book set that the museum puts out in Belgrade.
Right, because they moved all of his stuff back
right? They're the only ones that really show him respect. Okay, this country, it's shameful what they did to Tesla.
It really
bothers me a lot.
I agree.
Yeah, they're still using his stuff, and they don't even recognize who he is. That's pathetic.
I agree fully.
But anyway, the Belgrade Museum puts out a 3-book set. It's lectures, articles, and Colorado notes. That 3-book set is so wonderful for people that really like Tesla because it's really his writing, so you really feel like you're listening to him tell you about it,
Right.
Not somebody else's version. It's a really wonderful set, and I highly recommend it to everybody. And on page 129, I believe it's of the articles, it might be the lectures, there's an article on standing wave patterns and energy.
Right.
Fit in with this.
Wow, amazing stuff, man.
Yeah, it's, like I said, this is just skimming the surface. I'm just trying to get people to give it a chance. It goes way deeper than this.
Right, it goes everywhere.
Right, it's everything, so how can you cover it all on a web page?
Right. So the key is to come up with these descriptions and metaphors that can get it across to people, because it really is astounding.
The key is to get people to look at what the code really is. These two shapes that represent all sacred geometry, all of it's in that. If they would just take a look at that, it would click.
Right, and again, just do what you do. Just start building.
You have to work with it.
Start
to
building.
Understand it. Otherwise, you just think it's a pretty picture, you know.
Right, and again, with those two things, you literally just started to build onto them. Is that right? Just take
right.
one and put it on top of the
exactly.
other.
But making connections, like if it was a circuit board and you were soldering.
Right.
That's the rules I followed, and I didn't manipulate them in any way to try to make them go the way I wanted.
Right, they're all shaped exactly
right.
the same way, etc.
I was trying to be as scientific about it as I could.
Okay. Oh yeah, the imagery is astounding.
And this is just basic. Like when you get into 3D stuff, it gets so mind. But my computer can't handle it. You know, I really need to get something else set up so I can explore even deeper. But
boy, I'd love to have you. And we may have to talk about this off the air, but I'd love to have you send some of this stuff, the imagery in particular, to Ralph Abraham. He's a chaos theorist and a dynamicist, a mathematician who's brilliant.
He's a mathematician. He loves this code because this is the visual formula that he's looking for.
Well, I think we need to put you guys in touch and see what Ralph has to say, because I think that he would really, when I look at the imagery, I know he'd appreciate it, because
you have my word, it's genuine.
Right. Oh no, I mean I'm not doubting it. I'm just trying to understand it. I think.
Right.
That,
well, believe me, I don't know everything.
Right.
You know? I just know what it is.
Right. All right. So you go on then to create a second wheel, and now I'm looking at that one as well.
Yeah, that's the full-scale air wheel, and I still have a lot more to do, and I feel like it's a jinx if I talk about it.
Okay, we don't have to talk about that then. But the bottom line is the goal is the same, is to get a wheel. And again, you're doing this in your own lab or whatever. You're not on the
property. Not even a lab. I'm doing my office.
Okay, but maybe you can clarify something for me then, because I'm confused about this idea of location that...
Well, there's magnets everywhere.
Okay, so it's just a matter of getting the right pattern in order to tap into the...
Well, no, there's an existing pattern on anything in existence, okay?
Right.
So your body has a pattern, you just don't see it. Like, for example, when you start looking at these water experiments, you'll see the patterns in the water, right?
Right.
Well, if a car went by your house with a loudspeaker and your coffee cup started vibrating on the table, one of these patterns would be there, but you just don't see it.
Right.
You understand?
So
that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
And within that pattern, there's grid patterns. So whatever the pattern layout is for the Earth, there's going to be grid patterns. How to utilize them fully, I haven't gotten to that point.
Okay. All right. But that, okay. I got you.
But I'm pretty close.
Right. All right. What about, I tell you what, we're right about the bottom of the hour again. Let's do this. Let's take another break, and we'll come back in about 5 minutes, and we'll have another... 25 minutes or so to talk a little bit more and then finish things up. Okay.
Okay.
But yeah, but we're getting there. I'm definitely much more clear on it, John, than I was.
You'll be more. The more you look at it, the more you read, the more you let it soak in, and
right.
it'll click.
Right, and it's one of these things that it is. I mean,
it's the base of duality. Okay, you notice how everything has duality.
Yes, that's the whole world that we live in, and that's
right.
one of our biggest problems. Apparently, is that we live in this good and bad world. So,
but in structure also, you know, just like your face, cut your face down the middle, you got two equal sides, two equal
right.
structures.
Right.
That's what this is based. That's the base of that. This is the base of that. So.
All right. Well, I'm with you. So. Let's come back and we'll talk about it again in a few more minutes. In the meantime, this is Mike Hagen. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. We'll do a piece of music here by Mishka. This is called One Tree. We'll be back in just a few minutes with John DePue, and we'll have another half hour with John to talk about the Coral Castle Code and the amazing discovery of this simple, simple pattern that ends up apparently building reality and the universe as we know it. Just a small cookie. I don't know if I really want to take a bite out of that one, but anyway. All right, here we go. Back in a few minutes, and stick around for the end of the program. It should be interesting.
South America and Australia. From all Aloha, this is Paradise Newland.
And Michael Heisen.
And you're listening to
Radio Orbit
with Mike Hagan on KOPN,
Columbia, Missouri.
All right, you are listening to Mike Hagan on Radio Orbit, Columbia, Missouri. And before that, we heard Mishka with One Tree. And again, apropos with the conversation tonight, my guest is John Depew, the discoverer and documenter of the Coral Castle Code. And if you'd like to jump along with us and go to the website, you can get to his website at www.coralcastlecode.com, or you can get there from my site at radioorbit.com and just jump over from my front page there. At any rate, the roots and branches of one tree, apparently, you know, we talk a lot about in this show, John, about the connectivity of all things. And although your angle is a very unique one, coming from a very unexpected area, there are men and women in other areas that are sort of coming up with similar ideas, at least, of this idea of connectivity. In other words, it is becoming more and more accepted. I don't know if people understand it in the way that you do, but the bottom line is it's no longer hocus pocus, you know.
Yeah, it seems like it's moving that way for sure.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's... how should we handle this? We've got about 20 minutes, 22 minutes or so to talk. Should we move down to the water or should
yes.
we... Okay, let's do that.
Keep moving through it. Where are you at right now?
I am at right about 150, 149, 148, 147. I've got those, and then I'm moving forward on
those
that.
Those are my first water experience.
Right.
You can see that. That's a magnetic vibration setting up those patterns.
And the water is in a bowl?
Like a little galaxy. They rotate just like a little galaxy.
Wow, and again, they take on these amazing patterns.
Yeah, and they rotate. I found galaxy pictures that really match them really well.
Really? And again, it makes sense, this idea of the fracticality, the self-similarity across scale. Okay, so again, for descriptive reasons, the water is contained in what sort of a...
this little modified container that I made.
All right, just a little basin or something. And then applying the field, we get these patterns that begin to show up and then to rotate.
Right.
All right, now again, I think that one thing we should try to clarify for listeners, and again probably for myself as well, is the transmission of the way of the pattern from the wheel to the object or whatever that you're trying to affect. How is the connection made between the two?
How do you do it, you mean? Done two different ways. I've had it next to my wheel, and I've sent it through wires. I finally found that. It took me a little while. I modified an old radio. Radio signals are magnets. It is magnetic current. Magnets don't go up the ionosphere and come back as radio waves, as they send up, as they think, or as they pretend that they think. They come down as radar waves.
Hmm.
They go up, come down, they bounce the magnets off what's already up there, and come down as back as radar waves. So they're wasting energy. One type of magnet goes into the ground, one type of magnet is going out.
Goes out, okay.
Right, and that's how they come out of the secondary transformer of a radio.
All right, and this is sort of represented in these water patterns when you see secondary patterns forming. Right.
That's what I want to show you, too. It's 157.
Okay, I'm at 157. I'm looking at it.
That, I haven't even gotten too deep into this, but it's so amazing. You'll create a standing pattern and change the frequency, bring it to a different level, and you create these other patterns that sit on top and float around. The way they move is very like mirage-ish, if that's even a word.
Well,
float and cascade over top, but they're not manipulating or they're not interfering with the first wave pattern that's there.
Right, and just looking at a still photograph of this, you can see in 157 in particular, yeah, but I can't imagine what that must look like.
It's bizarre.
When it's moving.
It moves around without interfering with the first one, so you can still see the first one underneath it.
Right.
And the more you do it, you just keep layering them on top of each other, and it's just it kind of messes with your brain. It's such strange behavior, the way they move. I don't even have a word to describe it, except a mirage.
Wow, amazing. Now, the rotation, again, of these things can be affected?
Well, that's all dictated by how you, manipulate the vibration.
Right, and that's all determined by how you utilize the wheel to begin with.
Right, and frequency.
Right. And again, there's some sort of a trick to that, apparently.
Well, it's just the feel for it. I can't even explain most of it. It's just something I acquired from trying so hard, for so long.
Right.
You develop a style, that's really what it is.
Interesting.
It's just like anything else.
So it's as much an art as it is a science.
Yeah, it is, exactly. That's a very good way to put it.
Okay.
But now if you go down to...
And again, that makes perfect sense as well, because this whole idea of the duality of science and religion not being able to speak to one another, and science and art being at odds, the bottom line is that the two of them together end up coming up with the neutrality and the...
They're just making a big mess out of something that's pretty simple.
Right. Isn't that just like us talking apes?
Yeah, but it might be on purpose, so don't feel bad.
Hmm. Right, there's that component of
you
it.
Think
sure.
about it. Think about, does anybody really try to make you an individual or see what you're really capable of doing as an individual? No. For one example, even on, you know, trying to make things better for every city, you see all these city workers doing all this landscaping and, you know, cutting grass. Why aren't they planting vegetables and stuff? Isn't that a simple way to have a solution for a big problem right there?
Yeah, it seems
like... I don't understand that, really.
Yeah, there are many, many... You could make many examples, I guess, of things that are just...
Shameful, really.
Yeah, not... Certainly...
Greed.
Yeah,
people don't
want
to let go of their power once they have it.
Ambition and we're to the point where it is critical. I mean, the planet is in peril, and we need.
And everything's based on a piece of paper with someone's picture on it that someone told you is worth something.
I agree. I mean, we've talked at length about the Federal Reserve and things like that on this show, and we're very familiar with that stuff. And the listeners,
people's efforts are what make the difference. Okay, don't need a piece of paper to do that.
I agree. I couldn't be more interested in individual accomplishment and effort because, you know, if you talk about systems and dynamic systems or really any kind of system, whether it's a human system or a chemical system or an energetic system, whatever, changes in those systems can always there are no group decisions. Changes can always be chased back to one individual in that system having a state or a phase change, something like that. And group decisions, all that stuff sort of comes later. But the individuals, and whether, again, it doesn't matter what sort of system we're talking about, changes in those systems can always be traced back to an individual
An individual effort
in that system. Yeah, so I agree with you. And
that's with resistance. Picture what would happen if everybody was encouraged to do that from the beginning.
Yeah, we'd have a different world, no question about it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
look at 160. That's the next.
Okay, let's move down to 160. And again, we have sort of the circular moi pattern or something.
That simple pattern right there is almost exactly identical to some of the NANA research I've been seeing as far as what they're getting at a nano level. So,
what do you mean at a nano level?
That the atomic vibration analysis is identical to that right there. That pattern that's showing up in the water.
Oh, so they're seeing similar imagery when they're looking at these things at a nano scale.
Exactly. Thank you.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so it all fits together, and that's just one way of looking at it. There's much deeper ways to prove that. I just can't explain it very well right now.
Right.
But if you go through my site, I have the links that prove all that stuff.
Well, these patterns on top of patterns are absolutely astounding.
Right, and that's, like I said, just nipping the butt. This is just with a modified radio. Now go down to 161, you'll see my modified radio.
Okay,
there.
I see that.
Okay, so these patterns, that's how I send it out through the wires. Without doing that, I can't create that effect.
All right, now let me ask you this.
Magnets into that radio coil there.
Right. So that's what sets up the original wave.
It's the magnetic vibration. I can do it next to the wheel, have the container actually touching a prong or like barely touching, not even touching, but just enough to get the vibration going through the magnetic current.
Right. Now, previously when you had the discs that were spinning, the gears,
you were able to
spin a whole bunch of gears based off of just the one original one.
Right.
Does the water react the same way?
Yeah, I did that, actually. That's funny you said that. Yes, I have proven that to work.
Amazing.
But you got to touch, like, you have a container, and then you just have it barely touching the other one, and it'll pass that same vibration through, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely follows the same principle.
All right. There's an interesting image that maybe we want to talk about or not, but it strikes me because I'm interested in some of these Tibetan bowls and this sort of thing.
The vibration bowl.
Right. There's a spouting bowl here that you have.
That says everything. If you look at the pattern on the bottom, you understand it now more than you ever would.
There it is, right there. So again, these patterns are going to start to show up everywhere, and once that we know what to look for.
Right. And believe me, you will see it everywhere. And when you start noticing it, email me back. I like to hear that.
Okay,
you
I'll do
will,
it. And I'm sure of it. I've seen it happen.
It'll change your life more than you think.
I've seen it happen before.
You can't go back.
Right.
Once you know.
Well, all right. Well, that's good. We're all about moving forward here.
Let me give you a simple example of the duality and the vibration here. If you move down just a little bit from that.
Okay, where should I go?
Right down to 165, 166, and 167. Look at them as a, you know, as a transition.
All right, what am I looking at there?
Just a drop of water on them that's sitting on a magnet in the center of my dish.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
Amazing.
See, I utilize the light to reflect the water to see the currents because that's the only way you can see the shape that the water's taking.
Mm-hmm.
You could miss it very easily, and that's how everybody has. Plenty of people have vibrated water into certain patterns, but they really are sloppy about it. They're not fine-tuning it. When you fine-tune it is when you get the nice, you know, the nice grid patterns.
Right, these standing waves that you're talking
right.
about.
Otherwise, you just get a big jumbling bumble of mess, you know.
So that sort of explains to me why, when I'd seen this stuff before, when they...
It makes sense to you because of that.
Yeah, it makes
sense.
It makes more sense now, yeah.
Yeah. That's something you can only find if you just sit there for years like I did. I went through hell with all this stuff, believe me.
Right. Well, it makes sense because like I've seen these pictures of water that have been exposed to music from Mozart, for example.
Right. Mozart supposedly knew this stuff, too.
Well, it sort of makes sense because the patterns that show up in water when it's exposed to a Mozart piano concerto, for example, it makes beautiful snowflake-like patterns and things like that. Whereas if you expose it to, Motorhead or something like that, you get just a jumble,
yeah.
Sort of.
Well, I've experimented that way, too, with music, and it is definitely an individual frequency thing, you know? Each one is different. Each song is different in the pattern it creates. It's just really interesting by itself, you know?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, as you say, it just goes on and on.
Yeah, it's endless. And that's why I try to do a little bit of everything to show a little bit of everything on there, but I'm still missing a lot. And I have a lot more to contribute and show, you know, that I haven't even gotten to yet.
Right. Well, you mentioned something here about the snowflake experiment.
All my whole life, I've been fascinated with snowflakes, and I always felt like they were the blueprints of nature in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found this code, I knew right away it was the same thing.
Right. Yeah, there is something
snowflakes
about it.
Snowflakes might not be as individual as people think. They might start out as a blanket fabric of a pattern that gets broken up.
Right.
They're just not, when they pick up a snowflake and then pick up another one, the odds of them picking two from the same fabric, are pretty... I doubt they would be able to do it.
Right, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, when there's trillions upon trillions of them.
They break up way up there, and they're just, you know, spread mixed and... You know.
Right, I mean, has there ever been a serious study of that done? No.
Right. Have they tested them before they've dropped? You know, like, have they been able to capture that crystal formation before it's, you know, fallen? Or, you know, broken up.
Right. In other words, does it create individually or is it created individually or, like you say, does it come from a larger
fabric or layer
or pattern or something?
That's the way it works in everything I've seen so far.
Huh. Very interesting.
You know, the grid pattern.
All right. Well, look, we got a few minutes left here to talk about some stuff. So let's talk about implications. I mean, this is what it all comes down to. In other words, all this stuff is striking and stunning and amazing and remarkable and all of these adjectives. The bottom line is, how do we utilize it in order to... is it a lifeboat? I mean, is this discovery a lifeboat for us?
Well, to understand the base of energy, to me, is a lifeboat if they don't understand it now, and they're not showing that they do. But I know they do. I mean, I know there are certain people that do. I can tell by certain building designs that somebody... still really knows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there are some significant buildings that are exact blueprints of this code. So, that's not by chance.
And you
that
start
takes
to
a high level.
And I imagine you start to see it in things like corporate logos and things like that too.
Even things you'd be surprised where it shows up.
Huh.
But that's it's not something I really, you know, I don't push those people too much.
Right. There's no reason to. In fact,
I'm not trying to start a fight with anybody. I'm just trying to help. You know,
right.
What I found.
Okay, so here's a question then for you. My opinion has always been that, you know, if we, and by we, I guess I mean collectively the sort of individuals, and I'll just say individuals, as opposed to members of some group, whether it's a government or a country or whatever, but if individuals are ever really going to take control of their own lives.
They have to realize they're worth something.
Well, they have to do that, but they also have to have the means in order to to break the bonds of control that they're under. So,
but that's a choice, but it has to be a large-scale choice. It can't be, you know, individual, otherwise they're just going to suffer.
Well, how does the discovery that you've made give us an opportunity maybe to do that, though?
But the whole thing is it can't be done for everybody. People have to participate themselves. Everybody has been waiting and waiting. They still wait. I'm showing it right in their face, and they're still waiting. You know, what else can a person do, really? You know?
Well, no, and I'm with you. But I guess the question that people may ask is, what are they supposed to do with this information?
Well, what do they know now that they didn't know before?
Well, are they supposed to go build their own wheel and start to...
Well, I wouldn't recommend that because there's still a lot to learn about that. But
right.
you can first start by examining nature in a different way and start realizing and looking at nature with the understanding that there's two individual magnets and the neutral particles of matter. And that's going to open up a lot of doors for a lot of people, which is going to escalate into their actions, you know.
So again, the key, as always,
is
understanding, clarity, knowledge, and then action.
It opens the door, and it's amazing what happens from that point. Just the people I've been working with, I've been training people for the last 6, 7, 8 months, and what I've learned, trying to build up people to be where I'm at with understanding what I found.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already, you know, blossoming. So if more people contribute, it'll blossom, you know, more.
Right, again, just this fractal thing that can get very, very big.
Recently, I must say, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of advancement I've noticed in people's interest, you know, from like high levels, people that are really, you know, that know what they're talking about.
Good.
Because I'm a normal person. I don't even talk well, you know, I can barely even communicate, so.
Well, you're doing...
curse of mine.
No, you've done fine tonight, so, and the information as... You know, don't beat yourself up. I mean, this stuff.
No, I'm not
is
trying to be
honest.
I'm trying
difficult.
To let you know where I'm coming from.
Right,
and why I sound so sloppy.
Right, and it's difficult to communicate, though. Like we've been saying
right.
before, I mean, these are concepts that aren't that easy, especially when they're so visual.
And
you know?
The topic, you know, the topic being that it is the Holy Grail. People don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
They don't want to. They just want to write that off right away without even looking at it.
Right.
I wouldn't say that if I didn't know that's what it was. I'm
right.
not, you know, not a fool.
Right.
Then again, I might be a fool for just saying it.
Well.
I don't know.
Sometimes being foolish is the only way to learn things.
It just feels like it's the right thing to do. I feel like that's what I'm supposed to do, so I'm doing it.
Well, that's what we're supposed to be doing, I think. Follow your heart and do what that tells you, and you'll probably end up in the right place. So, well, all right. So what's next for you then? You're going to continue?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of it, really. I got a bunch going on right now that, you know, is going to take it to, you know, a more advanced level. I have a good understanding now to work with that's going to help me a lot.
All right, so you think that the foundations are built basically now. It's a matter of implementation and understanding that and I guess it is a technology.
Yeah, definitely an existing science. It's,
right.
It is the mathematical formula for creation.
Yeah. There's
a formula for creation, and that's it. That's why if you know a mathematician, get him to take it serious, and believe me, he'll see it pretty soon.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You and me will stay in touch, you know, after the show. I'll send you an email or something. But I would like it if you might give me or at least point me in the right direction of, you know, a synopsis or a small amount of material, including some imagery or whatever, that I might send to some mathematician friends. I think it would be...
You could just send them to my website. That'd be easier for them, right?
Yeah, that'd be fine, too. Yeah, yeah.
It's more, you know, that's why I laid out that way, because I don't communicate well, like I said. But.
Right.
That's why I try to get it out on the webpage as best I can, and you know,
yeah, well,
my spelling
well,
is horrible, my grammar is horrible, but the message is huge. So.
Yeah, the message is absolutely amazing. So,
and it's much deeper than I've shown you.
Well, I think that I can extend the metaphor, and I think that's the whole thing. Is that what becomes so difficult is that it really does encompass everything.
Yeah, there's no beginning and there's no end because it doesn't magnets. There's you can't destroy magnets. It is light. Once it gets taken out of something, it goes to something else. It does not get destroyed, which should make people feel better about themselves.
Right, that has implications for after death and all that,
right.
all that sort of thing.
Right.
Well, all right, John. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to have to stay in touch, and if you're willing, we'll do this again, and we can sort of follow your progress as you learn more, and you can help us learn more as you go, because... you're obviously on the leading edge of this thing, and I know that people need to do their own work and to investigate these things on their own. But it certainly helps to have a teacher and somebody who's been down that path before. So certainly hope that you continue to share this stuff with us.
Well,
I'd be glad. Anybody starts participating, feel free to send me your information. I'll try to post it or something.
Yeah, if you're interested, we'll give out the website one more time. And if you want to give, I think there's a contact link right on your website there. So, all right, everybody, that's what you should do. Get interested in this stuff if it sparks you. And if it makes you think a little bit, go down there to www.coralcastlecode.com and start investigating the work that John has done, because the deeper you get into it, the deeper it gets. And it is pretty amazing stuff. So, John, all right, 2 hours under our belt just like that. So thanks very much. I appreciate you spending the late hours of the evening there in Florida with us, and thanks for doing a great job, actually, of explaining this very difficult topic and complicated topic to some people out here in the middle of the country. So,
okay, thank you, Mike. Thank
all right, I'll be in touch again, John. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too. Bye.
All right. All right, everybody. There you have it, John Depew, the discoverer of the Coral Castle Code. An amazing story. And I hope people will look into that a little bit further, because I didn't take it as seriously as I maybe should have early on, and I didn't do as much homework as maybe I should have. But it was a fascinating conversation, and I'm really blown away by some of the things that John said and that I saw tonight on his website, and I'm going to look deeper into it myself. All right, this is Mike. Next week we have Allison and Alex Gray. Again, two of the most distinguished and influential artists of our time, talking to us live from New York City. We'll have them next week, and I look very forward to it. And in the meantime, we'll finish things off with little Jimi Hendrix. And can't think of a better way to end the show tonight. So I hope everybody enjoyed it. Stick around for the Boogeyman. He'll be back at you in just a few minutes here. And don't miss the show next week with Alex Gray and his wife, the wonderful Allison Gray. They'll be coming to you live, Radio Orbit, bringing the art scene of New York right to central Missouri. So hope you guys dig it. And check us out on the web anytime in between now and then, www.radioorbit.com. And you can always email me at orbitradio@aol.com. This has been Mike Hagan. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.
And she slammed the door in his drunken face. And now he stands outside, and all the neighbors start to gossip and drool. He cries, "Oh girl, you must be mad. What happened to the sweet love you and me had?" Against the door he leans and starts a scene, and his tears fall and burn his garden green. And so castles made a stand, fall in the sea eventually. A little Indian brave who, before he was 10, played war games in the woods with his Indian friends. And he built a dream that when he grew up, he would be a fearless warrior, Indian chief. Many moons passed, and more the dream grew stronger, till tomorrow he would sing his first war song and fight his first battle. But something went wrong. Surprise attack killed him in his sleep that night. And so castles made of sand melts into the sea eventually. Girl whose heart was a bound, cause she was crippled for life, but she couldn't speak a sound, and she wished and prayed she could stop living, so she decided to die. She drew a wheelchair to the air, jumped ashore, and to her legs she smiled, "You won't hurt me no more." But then a sight she never seen made her jump and say, "Look, a golden winged ship is passing my way." And it really didn't have to stop, it just kept on going. And so castles
made a sand, slips into the sea.